This is episode 012 of the Bad Apples. The Bad Apples is a group of die-hard Apple computer users. If you're an Apple noob, there might be some stuff in this show that you don't quite understand. But don't worry, you'll get the hang of it. If, on the other hand, your first computer was an Apple IIe or similar, then you're going to fit right in. Whoever you are, give us a listen as we talk about cool Mac wares, Mac tips, and of course, an occasional foray into Unix. My chief security officer, Gort, has been called off on assignment this week, some suspicious activity in the S-bin. So it's Klaatu on my own, so obviously we'll be talking about video the entire episode. Obviously, Macs are known for being video workhorses, but I want to delve into a few apps that are handy to have around, whether you're an iMovie Pro or a Final Cut Ninja. Bitrate Pro. That is the name of the little software application that I've had open on my desktop for 7 straight days now. It's a tiny little application. Might as well be a widget, but it's basically just a calculator. And if you are working with digital video and you're trying to figure out what bitrate you should save your project in or compress your project at, you can certainly type in the duration of the project in time code. So that's hours, minutes, and frames. You can tell it what your target file size is. And there's a couple of presets. There's the typical CDR 650 and 700. There's DVD 5, DVD 9. There's HD DVD. There's even Blu-ray. And it will then calculate what bitrate you should have your project compressed at. You can also do it, I mean, it's algebra. You can do it any way you want. If you know the bitrate that you have and you know your duration, it will calculate the file size. If you know the file size and the duration, it'll give you the bitrate. If you know the bitrate and the duration, it'll give you the file size. So it's, or did I already say that? But yeah, you can put in whatever you know, two of the three things that you know, and it will spit out the third component for you. Typically, you're going to know the duration and you're going to know your target file size. That's typically the way you're going to be using it. But it's a very handy little application. It's, you know, simple, but something that if you're doing a lot of video, you could definitely find yourself using quite often. I think I had originally downloaded it from apple.com, which is a site or a page that I frequent at least every other morning. But I have since hunted the programmer's homepage down, and it's a really great page to check out. It's Daniel Pimley's homepage, and the address is pimley.net. That's pimley.net. And on there, he has quite a lot, actually, but he's got some really great little projects that he's working on. There's Bitrate Pro, which is the calculator that I've mentioned, and there's HiToro, which is an emulator. It's emulating an Amiga system. I was never really into Amiga or Commodore or any of those, so I'm not really too familiar with, you know, its benefits or how it ever worked or anything like that, and I'm not even sure if I want to get into it because I'm already knee-deep in emulators and other OSs, so I'm not positive that I ever want to go down that road, but if I ever do, I know I can find an emulator there, which is really neat. And then the other little program that he's written is Reanimator, which is supposed to be sort of a first aid kit for LCD displays, I guess, if you're getting strange pixel distortions or off-color pixels. This may help you revive those pixels by flashing different colors, you know, through, so that it kind of wakes up all those pixels. And then he's also got some icon sets that he's done. Of note, he's done a Blade Runner set. So anyone who does anything having to do with Blade Runner is pretty much okay by me. And he's got some Neo Office icons that he's done, which of course is the Mac OS 10 port of OpenOffice. He's just done some different icons for that. Just a couple of different things like that. And he's got some mods that he's working on, something having to do with cars or something like that. not really something I'm into or know anything about. So, but, and then he's got a filmography of his, which I think right now contains one film, one short film, but it's still really neat. And he's got some writing and, just, you know, there's a lot of cool stuff on there. So you should check it out. It's pimley.net, and, certainly download Bitrate Pro if you think you're going to use it. Video on computers is really kind of in its infancy still. You don't really think so because it's come such a long way in such a short time, but it wasn't that long ago before people could only edit, for instance, very low resolution files of their real video footage. And then they had to match back according to what they've pieced together. Only now are you really hearing about people actually editing full quality video. I mean, Mini DV has been around for a couple of years, and that's good, but even that is a compressed codec, so it's kind of a cheat, it's kind of a workaround in a way. Right now, the graphics processors are getting large enough and powerful enough, and are getting cool enough to actually process high definition video. So video on computers is still getting to where it needs to be. And that's in terms of editing. Now in terms of watching video on computers, that's actually still in its infancy too. I know that it seems like we're pretty well off with YouTube and trailers online, QuickTime, DVD player, things like that. Doesn't seem like that big of a deal. And it's not. I mean, the performance, I think, kind of is in a good place. It's in certainly a tolerable place. I don't own a TV anymore. I just watch video on my computer. So, I mean, it's clearly at a very tolerable stage. But there's still a lot of unrest and growing pains that is going on in terms of delivery method. You've probably heard of MPEG-4, and you may have heard of H.264. You might have heard of MPEG-2, things like these. These are codecs that you are experiencing, whether you know it or not, through a variety of programs that are serving as decoders for you, so that it can translate the way the video has been encoded so that you can see it as a very pretty picture that you see on your screen. QuickTime, even QuickTime Pro, they're a little bit limited in what they're going to show you. DVD players, very limited. In fact, DVD player is, of course, technically able to show you a DVD from any region. If you go and plug in an Italian DVD, and I mean a DVD from Italy or Japan or Hong Kong, some foreign place, DVD player will actually ask you if you want to switch to that region permanently or if you just want to try it out. And it gives you, I think, 5 or 6 times that you are able to play different regions, and then you have to settle on one. Now that's a restriction that is not software or hardware. It's purely, it's arbitrary, and it's for the economy rather than for any good reason. What we're looking at is kind of a combination between different companies not cooperating on what codec should be used, and then different companies not cooperating on who gets to see what in accordance to who is paying for what. Lucky for you, lucky for me, lucky for the free world. There's something called VLC Player, and it's a very popular software, and I almost thought, well, maybe I shouldn't even talk about it because probably everyone knows about it, but the more I'm talking to people, the more I'm realizing people aren't actually totally aware of it yet. VLC Player is open source, it's free, it is available for every platform out there, Windows included, Linux included, Mac OS X. It's a simple little software, you download it for free, you install it just as you would anything else. And it sits happily right there, more or less next to QuickTime. But it's a QuickTime substitute, and it's even a DVD player substitute. If you want to watch a movie from a different region, you can certainly watch it without any kind of restriction or questioning glances from DVD player, right within VLC. if you get .avi files, say you're into obscure Japanese anime uploaded by fans as a .avi, you can watch that in VLC Player, no problems. There's just, I mean, anything you throw at it, even DivX, it will play. And that's a great thing because, I mean, obviously the internet is connecting so many different people, so many different ideas, so much art is out there for us to check out, that obviously there shouldn't be just a self-imposed limitation, you know, that a software programmer has simply programmed into a software. And luckily VLC doesn't honor any of this stuff. It's just going to play video no matter what. Certainly there might be a new codec sometime that VLC hasn't caught up with yet, but there's updates as frequently as needed. And it is open source, so it's a community project that people contribute to, and it can be found at videoland.org, and I'll put that link in the show notes. And I encourage you to grab that. It's not a large application, but it is essential to a happy computing experience. Another thing that's essential to a happy computing experience, of course, is a nice cup of coffee. And that music means that it is time for a coffee break. I'm going to go grab myself a cup, and I'll meet you back here shortly.
Coffee? On the mess deck. Say half an hour.
This is kind of a really easy and minor Mac mod. It's really simple, but it's really cool. So, you know, you've got friends with new Macs, and all the new Macs, of course, come with that nifty little remote control that they use, and they have the front row and things like that. And maybe you're getting a little bit jealous. It's understandable, and it's okay. An easy way to get a remote for your Mac, especially, this works, I think best for towers, but it would work on anything, really, is just to go out and buy a remote control with a Bluetooth adapter. Now, this is going to be handy not only for remotes. If you've got a phone that you're going to sync up via Bluetooth, you might as well have this if your computer doesn't come with Bluetooth. And if your computer doesn't come with Bluetooth, or rather if it does come with Bluetooth, then actually you don't need the Bluetooth adapter, you just need a Bluetooth remote, not a big deal. But let's assume that your Mac is old enough not to have come with Bluetooth built in, and let's assume that you want the remote control. So you go out and you can buy these remotes with a Bluetooth USB adapter from companies like Kensington, I think even D-Link has one. A couple of different companies have them. And the Bluetooth adapter is designed to just fit into any USB port. Now, the way that I like to do it, and this is where I guess the very minor sort of easy mod comes in, is to crack open that Macintosh, preferably, again, a tower would work best. And if you open up the Mac, a lot of times on the USB card, there's actually an internal USB port. If not, if you've upgraded your USB, if you want to upgrade your USB to a USB 2.0 card, certainly most of those on the market they'll often say it's a 4-port USB card. You look at it, and apparently there are only 3, and you're wondering why they're calling it a 4-port. Well, that 4th port is a lot of times just right on the inside, and a lot of people wonder, hey, why is there a port on the inside of the computer? Well, this is a perfect example of why you might want a USB port on the inside of your computer. You can put the USB to Bluetooth adapter right on the card. It's inside your computer, so it's not taking up an external port. It's also not jutting out the back of it. And you can use the remote with it. You'll look really cool. You'll feel really cool. And you'll still have 3 empty USB ports, or whatever it is that you've upgraded to, on the outside of your Mac for all of your various peripherals.
At speeds too fast for the human eye, the shuttle races back and forth.
Computers are such a central element of our daily life, and so much more attractive than, say, your average TV set. that a lot of people are making the move away from TV sets entirely and embracing their computers. Yet it's difficult to completely get away from a television set sometimes because it does have its uses. Your video game console of choice might need some kind of screen. You can't quite play a PS2 or PS3 without a TV, for instance. And there are those movies that have yet to be released on DVD, believe it or not. And so VHS still has its place, mostly for the real obscure foreign films that I like, but still, it's important. And I don't know, maybe you like TV. I don't, but maybe you do. The answer lies, of course, in what are commonly known as video capture cards, but what are more precisely analog-to-digital video converters. It's a little box, sits outside of your Mac, and has a variety of inputs on one end, and some form of output, usually a USB or a FireWire output, to your Mac on the other end. In the good ones, the conversion is happening inside of that little box, relieving your Mac's CPU and GPU of any real work. The good news, too, is that they're getting relatively inexpensive. Certainly no more than a TV set, and a lot less than an HD TV set. And of course, computers are, by nature, HD monitors. A company called Miglia manufactures a few that work really well and are designed primarily for the consumer with discriminating tastes. They incorporate some proprietary software that incorporates a lot of TiVo-like features. You can record straight to your hard drive and then send it to your iDVD or DVD Studio Pro or Toast if you want to record something for keeps off of the television or off of your VHS tape. For standard definition, you're going to pay maybe about $150. For high definition capabilities, you're looking at more around $250. But it's totally worth it for either consumer or professional markets, considering that the conversion is happening outside of your Mac. For a greater variety of inputs, you can look at Canopus and other professional solutions like Blackmagic cards, but those are the $1,000 price range and upward, of course. I mean, you can get really crazy, and you're getting BNC connections and things like that, and if you don't know what a BNC connection is, you don't need it. But the big deal about the conversion happening within the box and not in your Mac is, number one, that there is a latency, but you're not going to crash your computer trying to encode video, for instance, and you're not tying it up. So even while your computer is playing video, you can do other fairly CPU-intensive and GPU-intensive work without really having to stop your video from playing. Now, you should note also that the Miglia cards require a USB 2.0 connection. So if you're working on an older Mac, you're not going to have that. You might have to install an upgrade card with USB 2.0 ports, or you may not be able to use it at all, depending on what kind of Mac it is. Like an iMac without an upgradable USB option, you know, you're not going to be able to use the full quality. It's because the bitrate flow on a USB 1 port, it's just not high enough for really even standard def, actually, not on the fly. So you need the USB 2.0. And let's see, a bonus tip on a somewhat related note. I recently did get rid of my television set because it just wasn't being used at all. I don't watch television, and I was watching all my DVDs on my computer. And by pure coincidence, I inherited from a friend an old graphite iMac. It's one of the classic iMacs, but it was late enough in the iMac arc of releases to have a DVD player in it. So after I donated my TV to a good cause, I just plopped the iMac in its place. I watch all of my movies on it. You may remember that all of those iMacs had really, really good speakers installed in them already. I mean, they had like really nice little speaker system in them. And I've never regretted it so far. I watch all my movies on it, and it's such a great looking unit, you know. I mean, now my apartment has a classic iMac in it. I mean, it does raise the geek factor around the apartment, I guess, but I didn't really need that probably, but I like it. I think it looks great. I think it's much more attractive than a huge television set. And now I don't use the Miglia box with that iMac. That doesn't have USB 2.0, so don't confuse these two conversations. Miglia I use with my more recent Macintoshes, my PowerBook, my G4 tower with the USB 2 card in it, those kinds of things. The older ones I'm just using as DVD players. But it's a great machine to have around, and the Miglia capture cards, or the capture boxes, are really fantastic to have. Makes my life really easy, and it kind of makes my whole entertainment life a lot more centralized around the computer, which is nice. This has been episode 012 of The Bad Apples. For show notes, free stuff, wallpapers, stuff like that, visit our website at thebadapples.5gbfree.com. That's thebadapples.5gb, as in gigabytes, free.com. If you want to email us or give us feedback, give us tips of your own, give us hacks of your own, if you have a question about Macs or Unix, send us a message at gort.klaatu@gmail.com. That is gort, G-O-R-T, dot klaatu, K-L-A-A-T-U, @gmail.com. The contents of this show is licensed under the Creative Commons license, or some such thing as that. In other words, we got nothing. No legal protection, no legal representation. You want to use parts of the show? Go for it. Tune in next time for more Macintosh memories, Mac hacks, and Mac apps with The Bad Apples.
Lost its zest. For him, the kick's gone out of living.